It's lovely to be here with you. It's a while since I've been here. It's a while. And it's lovely to be with Nick. I spend a lot of the week with Terry, and so it's kind of evening things up a little bit here. So I want us to think about changes. I want us to think about perhaps being a bit uncertain about what the future might hold. I want us to think about what moving on means, what moving forward means. I want us to think about partings. And I want us to think about where God is in all of these experiences. We know these experiences from home. We know them from family, from the changes, the separations, the movements in our families. We know them personally as we or a loved one faces illness. Or we know them from work when a colleague moves on or we move on. We know them from our community when something changes, a key component changes, closes, moves. We know it in our nation's life. What changes, what moving on, what the future may be about. And of course, here at St. Matthew's, you know what this is about. As you embark on the mission of supporting a new Christian community at St. Nicholas, where is God in all of these experiences of change, of uncertainty, of movement, of separation? Where now is our meaning and our direction and our hope? Some of you know that I have two teenage children. Anna, the older of the two, started at university this past October. And it's been a strange adjustment for the three of us who are left, as well as for her as she embarks on this new life. Many of you will have had similar experiences with children or grandchildren. You know the apprehension and the excitement leading up to the move, and then you know that sense of gap after they've gone, the space in your lives when your child has headed off. Now, Anna has only moved an hour away, not to Sweden, and to a place with very short terms, so she was back with us in early December. But it's still a big adjustment, and we're continuing to realize just how big. The house is quieter, despite the fact that her brother, who remains, is an avid drummer. Conversations are different. We're different. And Jutta and I, my wife and I, are adjusting to letting go. How do I let my little girl, who I remember being born, go away? Adjusting to seeing her make a life for herself that we aren't a daily part of. Adjusting to looking at our own life, Jutta and my, our own life together, now that our first child is moving on, in anticipation of the second in a couple of years. At a very deep level, it feels really different. And in all of this, where is God? Where is God with us? Where is God with Anna? What is God doing with us? And for you here today, where is God with you, with those who have left from last week to start the new church? And what is God doing with you and with them today? Or when close friends or members of your family move on, when there are gaps, relationships change, our sense of who we are changes, where is God in that? So we might feel like John the Baptist. Or we might feel like we think John the Baptist might feel. who points his own disciples, those two, towards Jesus, and then watches them leave him and start to follow Jesus. We can feel, as he might have done, that our time has passed, the future is somehow elsewhere, I must decrease, John the Baptist said, so that he might increase, my children are the future, I must step back and watch that happen. St. Nicholas is the new place where the Spirit will bring life, and we must just get on with it back here. We could do that, but where is faith in that? Where is God in that rather self-concerned response? John the Baptist clearly did not take that view, but continued to teach and to preach, challenging the powers of his day. Otherwise, he would never have been arrested and never have been beheaded. So we could feel sorry for ourselves, or we could say, actually, John the Baptist is pointing us to Jesus too, is reminding us that we are Jesus' followers. We are not his stay at home and feel left behind us. So let's take a look at that passage, that gospel passage we just heard. When those two disciples of John set out to follow Jesus, they are clearly not sure what John is pointing them to. They're clearly not sure what this future is that he is pointing them towards, what it means for them. They do not fully know or understand who they are following. They don't know who this Jesus is. They don't know what it means that John has called him the Son of God. They don't know what this means. And here we are not sure of the changes we are facing and of what following Jesus means now. And as those two disciples follow Jesus, not really knowing and feeling uncertain, what does Jesus do? He turns round and faces them. He knows of that they do not know what's going on. He knows that they are uncertain. And he turns round and faces them. When we are not sure, when we are unclear, when we are uncertain of what next, Jesus turns round and faces us. And the words he utters are the same words he uttered to those disciples, the first words he ever speaks in John's Gospel. What are you looking for? What do you want? In our not really knowing, in our feeling uncertain, wondering what the future might be like, whether it's here or at home or at work or facing illness, or it's in Ipswich or it's as a nation, he turns round to us and asks, what are you looking for? What do you want? He knows, in our not knowing and in our uncertainty, that we are looking for something. Something that will give us meaning and direction and hope. In the changes our families are going through, our church is going through, our workplace, our communities, the world is going through. In all our not knowing and our uncertainties, Jesus, who is always ahead of us, turns round and says, what are you looking for? And we might struggle to say what we're looking for, except that it has to do with meaning and direction and hope. And with those two disciples, all we might be able to stumble out is something like, where are you staying? Or how do we find you? Or help us find meaning and direction and hope. And Jesus' answer, what is it? It's not, I have no earthly home. It's not the answer he gives in Luke and Matthew's gospel when a man confidently says, I will follow him wherever he goes. And Jesus says, the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. No, That's not his response to those two disciples in their uncertainty and their not knowing, nor is it his response to us in our uncertainty and our not knowing. Instead, he says, come and see. We're looking for meaning and direction and hope. The disciples are looking for meaning and direction and hope. And he says, come and see. And what do? They spend the rest of the day with him. And what a time that must have been. We're given no detail of what he said or did, no account of the wisdom he shared with them, revelations he gave to them. But whatever happened when they left, they knew, and they were no longer uncertain. And they knew what they wanted to do. They'd been with Jesus. They'd realized in that deep way that we do when we are simply with him, realized that he was their meaning, their direction, and their hope, and that he was with them. Some of you know I've just spent 3 months on sabbatical, a busy and exciting and incredibly refreshing time. But the most important thing that I learned in that time was that I need to spend more time with him. With all the challenges that I face in my job, that we face together, all the questions, the uncertainties, the not knowing, I must spend a lot more time with him. And somehow in that time, when I or you spend that time with him, we begin to see differently. We see things differently. In responding to Jesus, come and see, we do indeed see. And we see ourselves differently. We see the world differently. We see those challenges that seem so insurmountable differently. We see the changes going on in our lives which were producing uncertainty and anxiety in us. We see them differently. It happens to all of us when we spend time with him. Somehow in that time during my sabbatical, my daughter was an hour away at college starting this new life. I began to see from the things she was telling me and the stories she was telling about the friend she was making, I began to see how much he is with her. Whether she realizes it or not, I could see that. Just a little bit more, I could see and see more clearly. And as we ask here, who are we now? Now we've sent off 24 adults to start a new church. Who are we here now? What is our meaning, our direction, our hope? And he says, come and see. Spend time with me. Start to see as I see. As I see you and as I see your future. Come and spend time with me. That is what he wants us to do. And when we spend time with him in prayer, in words or in silence, or in worship, or in this Holy Communion as we receive this bread and wine, or in loving service with the homeless, the sick, the prisoner, the hungry, or in all of these ways, when we simply make time to be with him, this is what we will shape who we know him to be and who we know ourselves to be. It'll shape how we see, and it will give us meaning, direction, and hope. And we notice from that reading that something happened to Andrew in that time with Jesus. He came to see that there were gaps, that this was not just for him, but for others too. Just as right now, you see that there are gaps because of those who have left. And Andrew, what did he do? He knew that one of the gaps was filled to be filled by his brother. So he went to find his brother. And in that time with Jesus, he'd realized that Simon needed to be part of this too. And as we sit here, spending time with Jesus, thinking about our gaps, we become aware of who might be missing. Who new is missing? Who do we want to share this with now? Who are we going to find after we leave today? And echoing Jesus' words, say to them, come and see. Come and see why it is that whatever I am facing in my life has meaning, direction, and hope. Who are we going to say to come and see? I remember one Sunday when I was a vicar in East London, a group of regulars were missing. They had gone on a trip. It was a key group, and we noticed that they weren't there. It was very clear. They left a big gap. And that same Sunday, four what we called then, maybe call now, young adults turned up for the first time. We'd never seen them before. I thought afterwards, it was as if that key group somehow needed to not be there to create the gap that enabled that four to appear. Two of those youngsters stayed. They became the start of a surge of young people coming to church, each one saying to the next, come with me, come and see. What does Jesus say to Simon when he meets him after Andrew has brought him to him? What are his words for Simon? Words that are for every disciple through the ages. I am giving you a new name, a name that gives you my meaning, my direction, and my hope. You will be Cephas. It means Peter, and Peter means rock. And on this rock, I will build my church. And Jesus has been building ever since on rocks like Simon and Peter, Simon Peter, and rocks like you and rocks like me. He is our meaning, our direction, and our hope. And with him we move with gratitude and cheerfully as he calls us to new meaning, new direction, and a new hope. He's turned round to us and said to us, come and see. Come and spend time with me. And as we see as he sees, we begin anew to go out to family and friends and neighbours and say to them, come and see. And we know that he is our meaning, our direction, and our hope. And upon us, he is building his church. Amen.